We're on lesson 15. These lessons are, we're kind of staying in the same day for a couple lessons. So we're still in Monday with our lesson this morning. So there's a lot going on in the days that we people before Christ is crucified. But one of the things we probably have already picked up or will pick up or realize that what Christ is doing, there's going to be no excuses of what's occurring. He lays, we'll see one of those pieces of puzzles to fall into place where his disciples should know that what's occurring is exactly what he said was going to occur when he said it's going to occur. The time frame is without a doubt. There's Christ and our Heavenly Father lays it out in a way for them that they should see all the pieces. May not put it together like sometimes we don't put together, but all the pieces of the puzzle, the picture will fully paint what's going on, what's getting ready to occur. And we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning. It's going to be a big contrast from Sunday to Friday. Sunday is being glorified and stuff like that, and within less than a week, they're going to crucify him on a cross. I think Jerry put it well last week. He says it just shows that a lot of these things, events occurred because you're not going to stop what's going to happen. The Lord had a plan, and it's going to be fulfilled. So you can go during that short period of time. That's why there's a lot of things occurring on Monday and Tuesday before we start getting our events going into Thursday and Friday. So we will talk a little bit about what we talked about in Sunday's lesson, just go into more detail. So we're talking in this morning's lesson, we're still on Monday. Sunday worship, we'll be moving into Tuesday, early on Tuesday, and talking about that stuff. We're going to be talking about that victory. Two times occurred with that victory, and we got a lesson out of it. We remember last lesson, how important it is to be at worship and worship the Lord and all that important. We're going to follow up with that, as how important it is with our Christian life. That we're going to talk about in Sunday worship. But on Monday, Jesus, let's go back just a little where we left off last class. Sunday night, in Mark 11:11, Jesus entered Jerusalem and went into the temple court and looked around at everything. But since it was already late, he went out to Bethlehem with the 12. He saw it last Sunday night. He saw what was going on. He saw the stuff. And we teach, it's not a sin to get angry. It's what you do with that anger. And what did Jesus do with that anger? He said, this is not right. This is about as wrong as it can get. He had every reason to be mad, and he had every reason to act right then and there. But he taught us a lesson. He taught us a lesson that for us, especially, that maybe when we get angry, we need to sleep on it, give it some time, and think about how we're going to process what's going on. That on-the-spot anger, usually we say things we don't want to say, we do things we don't want to do, a lot of things occur. And I think it was a lesson, really, to the apostles, because there are going to be a lot of reason to be angry by the end of the week. And a lot of reason, and some of them are not going to handle it quite well, as you'll remember. But he's teaching them every step of the way how to ever handle every aspect of their life. Even with the disciples, as we read on, after Jesus had left and went on, how much they really obtained, especially when they received the Holy Spirit. they were able to manage and handle a lot of different situations. Especially being in prison, being abused, and all that other stuff, the way they approached it. Even down to their deaths, they honored the father. And that's what you're going to see here. But I thought, it's just one of those things that popped out of me when I was doing my studies, that, hey, man, that's an awesome lesson to be learning. If I get angry, maybe I'll hold on to it for a little while and process it and see, is it something I really need to be angry over, or is it something that I need to handle in a proper way?
It's kind of, well, it's not funny, but it's amazing that what you just said. We had a conversation about that this morning, and we don't realize, as humans, we have been programmed to defend ourselves when someone upsets us. We take it personal, as if we're going to feel belittled, disrespected, mistreated, and our natural reaction is, I'm not going to let you do this to me, so I'm going to get you straight, you know, as you're not going to say anything you want to say to me, you're not going to treat me in a kind of way, you're not going to, so of course you're not going to physically hurt me if I can help it, but before physical, anyone, in some cases, people can just look at you and people thought, what you looking at? You know, if you're looking at me too long, what are you looking at? You know, because what's wrong on me? You know, it's, we take offense so easily when we are supposed to be showing Christ. Mm-hmm. That's not what Christ did. With everything that Christ went through, what he took physically, not to mention being disrespected and talked to in a kind of way. We're supposed to be setting an example, but we're so easy nowadays, we take offense because we want to do physical, you know, get it straight. We're not doing what we're supposed to be doing as Christians.
You know, there's a thing in our body that is, the Lord put there, it's that fight or flight. Mm-hmm. When you're put in a bad situation, your body's going to do one or two things, and it's how we process it. There's times when we have to, for to protect our very life, that we have to fight to defend ourselves to get out of that situation. But there's also that flight, that there's times that we look for that avenue of escape, that I need to leave this and get out of this situation and stuff like that. We tend to, as humans, land more on the fight, even though there's an avenue of escape to be able to leave that situation. And that's one of those lessons that Jesus is telling us. If there's a way that you can just leave that situation for a little while, you're better off landing on that flight, get out of that situation, and move away from that situation. But that adrenaline, the adrenaline dump is where it comes from. That gives us, hey, your situation awareness is opened up, your senses are opened up, you can see more, believe it or not, you can see things more clearly, you can see things so you can react. Where normally if I don't catch my peripheral, but if I'm really frightened, I kind of, my broader perspective opens up to where I can hear things, I can see things, and it's that adrenaline dump. And it's, so the Lord provides you ways of knowing what's going on better than you normally would if you weren't in that fight or flight. The military really sees it a lot. Fire and police see it a lot because we live in that fight or flight aspect because we're there almost every day when something changes. And I can tell you, being there several times, that's what your body picks up. And that's what's wrong with me now is my tumors. They like to dump that when you normally you wouldn't be frightened. I will go into that nervousness and this stuff because the tumors and the blood pressure will go up and stuff like that. The adrenal gland, the tumors, that's where it comes from. And that's where I get my stuff from. That's where I struggle with being tired easily and stuff like that because I'm constantly fighting that, the fight or flight issues. But that's a natural thing that the Lord gave us for purpose and reason. We just got to channel it and use it for the right reason, just like you said. So there's a lot that's going to change in that 1 week period that literally going to change this. It affects us today. With some of the discussion as we get into the end of this lesson this morning is this week, if we didn't have it, there would be no hope for us. If Christ didn't do what he did at these moments throughout the week and make sure everything lined up, make sure he's doing his Father's will, we really would be a loss as a nation, loss as a world. And Christ knew it. That's why we talked about the emotional part of it, him physically being upset and looking over Jerusalem and seeing them and saying, because he knew, if I don't do this, what state will this leave us, the people he loved, in? There would be no chance. Satan would win. The battle would be over with. God's not going to let that happen. He's not going to let Satan to have the upper hand and win this. Satan may have thought this week Satan was probably at his most excited and glorious time for himself in his own mind, in a way his thinking that, hey, I'm doing it, I'm getting it, I'm really impacting and not putting the puzzle together either, because he could see the same puzzles everybody else could see, the same pieces, but he's so wrapped up in that he wants to beat God, throwing him out of heaven, that he's probably just so wrapped up and excited about all the things that are happening to Jesus and where all this is going. Because Satan knew what all these people were thinking. They're plotting, killing, and all that. But just that 1 week, how much the change that occurred for us even today. All right, let's talk about the fig tree for a minute. We talked about it Sunday. So, what do you remember about the fig tree?
Didn't have no figs on it.
Huh?
Didn't have no figs on it.
Didn't have no figs on it. A lot of scholars say it was probably out of season. It bloomed too early, or where the figs didn't produce. But from my understanding, the fig tree will produce fruit, start producing fruit before it starts producing leaves. Uh-huh. So if you see leaves, it's a huge sign that it's supposed to have fruit. And that's a huge lesson for us. I mean, we can look like we're providing the things that people need nourishment-wise and stuff like that. But, of course, I mean, how many times I wondered Jesus walk down the street or walk down the road and saw a fig tree, and that's what he ate. I mean, that was one of his meals. So he got up that morning, all right, here's breakfast. And start off the day. He's already processing what was happening the night before. He's going to wake up, and now he's hungry. And so he's got the physical and mental stuff playing at him, just like we would, hungry, angry, whatever they call it, stuff like that. We go through, we're not ourselves, a Snicker commercial you see where somebody's
angry.
So they eat a Snicker and they come back to the normal cells and stuff like that. It's all these things, just got to remember, Jesus faced the same struggles we face. He had that human perspective on it, that he felt hunger, he felt frustration, just like we did. And he knew, but this was a teaching moment. This was a teaching moment again for his disciples and those around him that would lead into tomorrow. It says in Mark 11, starting in verse 12, and now the next day when he had come unto Bethany, he was hungry, and seeing from afar, there it is, from a distance, oh yeah, that's got leaves on it, it's got to have figs on it, saw a fig tree having leaves. And when he,
and he went to see if to perhaps he would find something on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. So it was out of season for itself. In response, Jesus said to it, "Let no one eat fruit from you ever again." And the disciples heard it. So the disciples there and heard this conversation. Jesus condemned the fig tree for not producing the fruit that should be producing when it has leaves. And they were listening to that conversation, to it.
All right, but it says it wasn't the season for figs.
Yeah, but it shouldn't have been blooming leaves either. My understanding
is the figs
come before the leaves on most fig trees. So I'm not a gardener. And so there was something going on that Jesus was expecting there to be figs on it. That's what we needed. With Jesus, he was expecting that for it to be providing. It had the look. It had the look of what we were showing like Sunday, that it was a plum tree. It was fully leaved. It looked like it should have had figs in it. It gave the impression, hey, there should be figs on it. Full of green leaves and stuff like that. When you walk up to it, seeing from afar, it should have, an impression of it, it should have been having figs on it.
I got a footnote in my Bible, verse 13, from Mark chapter 11, is in the footnote, says that Mark informs his readers that it was not the season for figs. Passover always comes in March or April, and fig season is not until May or June. However, the fig trees generally produce a number of buds in March, leaves in April, and ripe fruit later on. Jesus was looking for the edible buds, the lack of which indicated that the tree would be fruitless that year.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
Thanks, Wes.
So that's a perspective that I'm picking up today. So he was expecting to get some type of nourishment out of it. So mm-hmm. It was time for it to at least have the buds on it from it. Fig trees in that region produces figs and then leaves, and this is what I got out of some of the courses. So whatever the reason was, he was expecting to get nutrients out of it. Mark tells us it was not the season for figs. Possible that this tree had bloomed out of season, and then it was not quite even time to have the leaves and stuff like along that line. Mm-hmm. And if so, it was probably not going to produce figs that year.
Okay.
So it was, for whatever reason, it gave the impression that it should have had to provide some type of nourishment. Mm-hmm. So when Jesus walked up to it, he was expecting that, and it didn't. So he condemned it. He said, if you're not going to produce, you're going to look like you're producing some type of nourishment, or you're going to look like you're going to be a fig tree in season, to be a fig tree in season. And you think about that as Christians, if we're supposed to, this is our season right now. We talked about it before. The harvest is ripe and ready. People should be looking at us to be able to provide what they need. And I think that's the lesson he was trying to get to the disciples. If you're going to be a Christian in season, which now is the season, especially when it gets close to the crucifixion, Jesus is trying to nail down those lessons. Now is the season for you. You need to be providing the nourishment people are looking for. That they may not take it. And that's another lesson that we need to learn out of it. It's your job to produce it and to offer it and to present it. But it's not your job to make somebody take it. The old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink it.
Yeah.
That's the way the world is out there. But we are expected to be able to provide what the world needs.
I'm thinking, too, this is was a good lesson for gardeners. It's always good to talk to your plants. I had a black walnut in Texas, and the silly thing grew 4 foot high and stopped. And I came out there, and I said, if you don't put something on, I'm pulling you out. The next week, it was growing like crazy.
So. But the part she forgot to tell you was that she grabbed that thing by the trunk and tried to jerk it out of the ground.
We can't do that to Christians. We're two people we're trying to convert, so don't do that.
You gotta nurture. Yeah. We gotta realize a fig tree, what is this fig tree's purpose?
Produce figs.
Produce figs, right?
Right.
And it's really just nothing but a tree, ordinary
right.
tree, like any other tree,
right.
if it's not producing figs.
Mm-hmm.
So what's our purpose as Christians?
Produce fruit.
Nourishing everybody else around us.
Mm-hmm.
A fruit don't provide fruit for itself, other than it'll fertilize it when it falls to the ground, but it's not producing fruit for to feed itself. It's producing fruit to feed others and animals and people
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to put things in perspective of what we're here for. We're Christians. We're expected to produce fruit for others. It's a selfless journey that we're supposed to be going through, but this world's attitude is like what we were talking about before. It's about ourselves. What are you looking at me for like that? And like, you know, the world is worried about what they're going to get out of it. If you change your perspective and you turn into a fig tree, you're producing stuff to help others, not yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to look at. Is that as Christians, we need to be producing Christian fruit, spiritual fruits, for others who are in need of it. And we keep talking about it. Is there's opportunities that comes us throughout the week that we can help others.
As Christians, we got to realize that we're living in a world that does not want to accept the truth. You know, so that's what we have to really call on. You know, the world is bold in what they're doing, so we have to be more bold, and we have to constantly call on strength.
Mm-hmm.
Have to.
Yeah, we still have to produce fruit in this time and age. We kind of want to be like that fig tree and not really produce what it needs to, just kind of sit over here, probably over to the side, and hopefully nobody will notice us. But that's not what we're here for. We gotta, like I said, look for those opportunities. Kim, we're coming back from, I think Lowe's yesterday, from getting mulch, and that same man was sitting inside the road, and Kim pulls out some money and says, "I don't know if I should do this." I says, "Oh, we're not supposed to worry about." Trying to figure out if he's legit. So we're just trying. We let the good Lord handle that. I said, but his hands are dirty. He's not very good clean clothes. If not, he's a great actor. So he ought to get a little bit of money for being a great actor. But it's produced. I said, but we gave her an opportunity and said, look. Keep things in the vehicle that you can give them that you know that will meet their nourishment and their needs.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry about the little bit of money you're handing me. The good Lord will take care of that part of it. We're just told to do the things that we need. So that gave that little teaching moment or that little interaction with my wife who's not here. You know she's not here, but we had that discussion.
Okay.
Those opportunities that will open up for maybe that seed to drop in of how we can. I know it's a bad world. I know there's a lot of people doing a lot of bad stuff. I know people trying to cheat everybody. We're getting ready to talk about that, about cheating everybody any way that they can. But all we're told to do is produce the fruit, spiritual fruit. And that's what we need to focus on. If we focus on that, like you said, the world don't want it. On Judgment Day, the world will face their judgment, but we'll be at their judgment day fully fruited and ready to have done what we need to do. The fields, like I keep saying, is white. It's ready for harvest. What do we say about workers?
They're few.
They're few.
Right, Jesus had already taught this lesson back in John 15. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you don't produce fruit, then you'll be cut off.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be cut off and destroyed.
Sometimes it's good to know your job description. Jerry is 100% right. He laid it all out. There's no excuse. He tells us what, if you don't produce fruit, just like that fig tree, you're going to be cut off. And that's a good example, Jerry. I appreciate that.
Faith without works is.
Yeah.
You got to
do something about it.
Produce.
So, what's getting ready to happen now? What happened the night before?
He saw something in the temple.
So he ends in Mark 11, verse 15. So they came to Jerusalem. Then Jesus went into the temple and began to drive out those who brought and sold in the temple and overturned the tables of money, charging and the seats of those who were sold doves. What do you think is really going on here?
It's almost like an open market in there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In the Lord's house.
In the Lord's house.
It's not about worship. Yeah. It's about
back then, money. The temple was a sacred thing. And so not only, because today we are the temple. But back then that was a huge deal. But it was a little bit more that was going on. Matthew tells us the same thing. Remember, I told you the perspective. Everybody sees it from a different view and different stuff and give different parts of the story. So Matthew pretty much tells us the same thing. Jesus goes through, so you kind of see that going through. Now, I can imagine Jesus coming in there and people looking at it going, what in the world's going on here? Overturning the tables. But Luke tells us a little bit more. The house shall be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers. You know what that tells me is they were cheating the people. Not only were they selling stuff in the market, but they were turning it into a house where they were probably cheating the people. What it's called. They knew the Passover was coming. They knew this was the man and opportunity. The price hikes and the different stuff. No telling what all was going on and how they were cheating. But they were not only doing that, but they were the robbing God's people in there as well.
Well, there was nothing wrong with them selling doves because that was something for the poor people to have in order to put an offering for the Lord in there. But what was wrong with it, first of all, it was done inside the temple. And second of all, they were robbing the people. If there's poor people, they couldn't afford a beef or sheep or whatever it was. So the Lord gave them the right to either get a dove or whatever to offer for an offering. So the Lord made it easy for them to be able to get an offering, but yet the people took advantage of it in order to get rich. So I think that's something else that Jesus saw that was wrong.
Yes.
So that's under the guise of being convenient.
Yes.
They all said, we're just trying to help you. We make it right here so you don't have to go wandering around and say and buy the stuff. We're just going to do it for convenience.
Yeah.
The deceitfulness they put across.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And the price hikes. They knew that people couldn't come on time, so they had to hurry up and get a profit before the season is over, before the next whatever. But the thing of it is they shouldn't have done it there. That's the Lord's temple. It was supposed to be a house of prayer. And it was written that they were doing. They were abusing not only what they were doing, they were abusing the people and the temple at the same time.
And it tells you how far the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the priests got away from the law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
tells you, it teaches you how far and why this was the time, and this was because they got so far away from every intent that God had planned for the law, for the people.
Well, you have to also remember that every town had a marketplace where these vendors could have been and selling their stuff. They didn't have to be inside the temple premises.
I want to move on to another part because this is one of those puzzle pieces I want to put together this morning. But you think they're traveling to come here. They're taking advantage of the travelers who have to travel and pack up all their stuff and everything, and they've got in their mind that says, I'll pick up what I need to for the sacrifice once I get there. So they made it, like Jerry said, they made everything perfect, so it's right here, it's right now, this is the best time. They probably have the best, they got the best doves areas in the whole region. You don't have to go anywhere, you ain't got to travel nowhere, and it's well worth the money that you're about to pay. A lot of them are stuck there. I mean, they're limited on money traveling wise, or they're limited on what they can do. They really can't go home and get a dove now because they're so far away. And so they're pretty much stuck in paying whatever they have to pay. And that's what they were taking advantage of in the Lord's house. So that's why I can see why Jesus coming there and going and seeing the prices and hearing the prices. All that's going on the night before, going, this is my Father's house. This is what's going through his head. This is my Father's house. All right, not the time, not the place yet, but I'm coming back.
He probably made the biggest impact right at the busiest time, too. Ooh.
But you also, you also the busiest time, the biggest impact.
Yes.
But I don't know if Jerry remembers comment he made last Sunday. The Lord has to make sure that we move forward to the Friday.
Right.
Everything, he doesn't want them to stop moving forward on their plot to kill him.
That's right.
With that being said, I really want to put a puzzle together for you right quick. This encounter with the Greeks coming to Jesus, we find that in John chapter 12, and if somebody can read, because there's a couple things that occur there that I really want to point out. John chapter 12, and somebody could read 20 through 30. I know it's 10 verses. Somebody wants to read 20 through 25, and somebody else pick up the last five, so it won't be so hard for one read.
Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the feast. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we'd like to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew, and Andrew to Philip, and then turned and told Jesus. Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds.
All right, somebody want to pick up verse 25 and read through verse 30.
The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it. For eternal life, whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me. Now my heart is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No. It was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Then a voice from heaven, I have glorified it and will glorify it again. The crowd that was there and heard it said it had thundered. Others said an angel had spoken to him. Jesus said, this voice was for your benefit, not mine. Now is the time for That's judgment right. of this world.
Yes. So Jesus is predicting his death in this verse. He said, this is what's getting ready to occur. This has to occur. Because if I die on the cross, it's like a wheat. If it just dies, it really doesn't do a purpose of it. Then if it, the whole wheat dies, then it creates seeds, multiple seeds, as we read. So it produces more. So what happens at the end of this? A voice. I told you there'd be those key points. When God wants them to take note, he talked about, Jesus talked about, my death is here for a reason and for a purpose, and I come here. And Jesus flat out said, man, I'm troubled. I know this is coming. My heart is troubled over it. But how could I not do it? Because if I don't do it, then everybody will be lost. But if I do it, I can impact so many more. And I do this, why? To glorify my Father. It's not about me. And at that moment, the voice comes and says, what's he saying?
I glorify it again.
And I'll do it again.
And again.
And he's talking about the resurrection. And he's talking about the crucifixion. He's gonna die, but I'm gonna raise him again. That's coming from the Father. And the people think it's thunder, or they think it's an angel speaking to Jesus, and Jesus tells them what?
Not for me,
this is for you. I already know what my Father wants. And he's yelling out to his Father saying, I'm doing this to glorify you. And that's when God speaks up and says, hey, you can be glorified now, and I'm going to do it again. So it leaves no reason for what's getting to occur. To the point that if we go back to, somebody don't mind going back just a week or so before that, what occurs in John chapter 11, starting in verse, where am I? 38. And then somebody will read 38 down to, should be 43.
Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there for days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out of his out. His hands and feet were wrapped in strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to him, take off the grave cloth and let him go.
So, man's been dead for several days. 3 or 4 days. He's going to be stinking if they roll the stone back. And Jesus has warned that. This man doesn't, Jesus calls out to him from outside the tomb. And this man literally has to do this to get out. Because he's bound up. He can't really get anywhere without any assistance. And Jesus told them, unbind him so he can leave. So they have to roll the stone back. He's down for, been dead for 3 or 4 days. So he's going to have an odor. This is all laid out in front of everybody to see. And he's going to be bound up in burial so he can't undo himself. What's getting ready to occur with Jesus?
He's going to be bound up, but he's not.
We'll go in deeper when that time comes. But he laid his resurrection and showed how that there's, if I'm dead, there's no way I can raise myself unless I'm God, unless my Father's doing it. So he lays that whole scenario out for everybody to see and view. It should take everything out of their mind of what occurs on that Sunday morning. I can imagine that stone, how much work it took, because we don't see that, we don't hear that in the scripture. I can imagine how much work it took to roll that stone back and be warned of all that.
Could you imagine? Hey, Simon, you roll it back.
It probably took more than
you know all he's been in there. But again, we see an example, once again, of our faith in action. They had to roll the stone. It's not that Christ could not have moved the stone as well, but it roll the stone away. And you'll see the result of what he can do. Mm-hmm. And we still got to do our part. Unfortunately, our Christianity for a lot of people is very immature. They want everything served to them. They want it handed to them. They don't want to get up and roll a stone. They don't want to get up and do any work. They feel like, I'm here to be served, not what Christ has said, which he says he came to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be our attitude in all things.
Exactly.
Got to do our part.
Do our part.
Got to do our part.
The example that Jesus laid in this short period of time, in that weird time frame, is that I will follow my Father's no matter what he tells me to do to death. And he showed these examples of all what you need to do as a Christian. And it's not a come sit down in a pew Christianity. It's not that at all. It's an active work, a daily involvement. If you look at Christ's life, it's constantly doing for others.
Well, I was just going to say, we have to remember that when the stone was put before a gravesite, it wasn't just on even ground. There was a dip in the ground where the stone had to be rolled into to seal the tomb. And there's no way one or two or even three men could have rolled that thing out of that group. And it also verifies then that there's no way anybody could have moved the stone on Jesus' tomb without those soldiers knowing it,
right,
had they been awake. Because it took multiple men in order for them to do that. But because God did it for Christ, this wasn't needed. You know, only God could have been able, strong enough to roll that stone. And here, I think it was also with Jesus' demonstration why he said, you roll away the stone, so they would realize how hard it really is and how many people it would take to do that.
Mm-hmm. The Lord took away all shoes.
Mm-hmm.
His wisdom is incredible. His way he presented and showed everything well ahead of time. The pieces of the puzzles. They didn't. That's a whole big piece right there.
Yeah.
That painted a huge picture that fit when the time came, fit in there, and you go, wow. And that's what the Lord did, was to show them every aspect and tell them everything. You think, reading it afterwards, Monday quarterbacking it, you would go, why couldn't they figure it out? We'd be in the same boat. There would be no difference if we were in there in that time frame, and we would miss a lot of the pictures until it all came together.
Yeah.
So, I'm over again.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Okay with that. Keep going.
Please, there's so much more in these books that I cannot cover.
Yeah.
So follow up and study, use your books to guide you in studying further, because I'm telling you, you'll get a lot out of it. A lot of, oh man, he didn't tell me that. I just didn't have time to. So go through your books throughout the week and pick up on it. And thank you for being a part of this. And we're not too far away from completing this series. So, like I said, let Jerry and Wesley know what you think about it, and maybe we can do later on do something similar.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you very much.